Monster Man, Episode 501, Al-Qadim Wrap-Up. Hello, and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm taking a look at the monsters that I find in them, their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. Today's episode brings us to the end of our journey through the monsters of Al-Qadim, the Arabian Nights-inspired fantasy setting for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition. As is traditional between seasons, I'm going to take a break for a while and do a bunch of listener specials. Listener specials are longer and typically more work, so I don't know how that really constitutes a break, but you know what I mean. I don't know how long it'll last. Conceivably, it could be up until the end of the year, which sounds like a long time, but considering that I take the last week of the year off and there are a lot of specials left to do, it might not actually be that long. I've also still got at least one My Favorite Monster episode that's going to come out during that time, and I might throw in some odd episodes on, I don't know, monsters from, you know, magazine articles or other smaller sources that I often do in between seasons because they're not big enough for a season by themselves. But today what I wanted to do was talk about what we've learned during the Al-Qadim season, what my sort of final impressions of it are like. But before I do that, I want to thank a new Patreon backer. Yes, this is someone who's gone to patreon.com/monsterman, and they have pledged as little as $1 a month to help support the show. And if, like today's backer, you pledge at the $2 or higher level, you'll also get access to all new episodes of my other podcast, Patron Deities, which is also currently doing a series of inter-season specials. It doesn't usually work out like that, but it's lined up this time. We finished a series on Haitian voodoo, and the patrons are currently voting on what the subject for the next season is. So, in fact, if you want to get a vote in there, you should also sign up. So thank you very much to new patron Nick McChannon. Thank you very much for your support, which means a lot to me. All right, so having finished the Al-Qadim Monstrous Compendium Appendix, what have I learned? This is what I would consider to be the sixth season of Monster Man. It's something that if I had to go back and start from the beginning, I would definitely put in the titles of the episodes, because I do think that, you know, season 3, episode 2 is a lot more welcoming than, you know, episode 150 or whatever. But the divisions between books make it pretty easy to think about. Our first season, of course, was the Monster Manual itself. Then we had The Fiend Folio and Monster Manual 2. And those seasons tracked the evolution of the game, with Fiend Folio, the difficult second album, representing our first look at the ways in which the wider gaming community was interpreting AD&D, and then Monster Manual 2 reflected a game more and more developing into its own thing, a game that referred to its own mythology and often assumed that players weren't fantasy fans who were looking for a game to express their fantasy settings, their fantasy images, whatever, but instead people who were coming into an established game that by this point had existed for over a decade and might be their first and indeed only attempt at this kind of gaming. Creature Catalog, our fourth season, is a grab bag, but it represents in many ways the evolution of a parallel game. Initially one that existed as a separate thing because of, you know, legal reasons or accessibility or whatever, but which was developing into its own kind of pulp fantasy enterprise, while AD&D aimed for a sort of authoritative respectability. And then, of course, there's Monstrous Manual. I don't like to pick favorites, and certainly I feel a little bit like I'm acknowledging failure when I say this, but Monstrous Manual, to me, was the worst season. Like, I don't know if it was the worst season to listen to, but it wasn't that much fun to do, because the book is just not very interesting to read. At least, most of it isn't. And in an episode, every time I say, yeah, this monster's the same as the monster from the previous version, that's just a few moments on the episode, but in preparation, you know, I still had to do it, right? I read the section and compared it to the original to see how similar they were, and that's not the most exciting experience. You know, add to that how much I don't enjoy the late 80s, early 90s TSR House style, and that book wasn't fun to get through. You know, sidebar, people make fun of how overwritten something like Vampire the Masquerade was. And those criticisms in many ways are fair, but it's important to realize that it was this kind of self-important stodge that Vampire was reacting against. Now, Vampire is self-important too, but at least in a way that has a little energy to it. Anyway, whatever. That brings us to our most recent series, the Al-Qadim Monstrous Compendium Appendix. Having never really had any experience with Al-Qadim previously, I didn't really know what to expect, And I was actually quite surprised. Okay, this is another sidebar. One of the things that I think a lot of people who have more familiarity with the gaming landscape find frustrating about the world of streaming games, your Critical's Role and your Dimensions 20 and your Adventure Zone and so forth, is the extent to which they rely on D&D 5th edition. They don't all. I know that both Dimension 20 and Adventure Zone have done non-D&D games, but it makes sense to do it. It is by far the most popular RPG. It is significantly more widely played than all of its competitors put together. But nonetheless, there are games where you can see players and GMs struggling with some of the system's limitations, which is not necessarily a criticism of D&D 5e. I know that it's not, like, cool to say this. You know, I should either be old school or true cult indie, and I'm sort of neither of those things. D&D 5e is fine. It's not my favorite system in the world. It's fine. And I think that there, you know, there's some things that you can do with that rule set. Like, if you're willing to throw out a good amount of it, that the basic core of it is applicable to certain types of games, but not an infinite amount of games. And essentially, if you're trying to use it for something that's not a fantasy adventure game of some kind, you're going to encounter a lot of challenges. They might not be insuperable, but they're certainly challenges, and in many cases, you'll waste less time just playing a different game. You can see this in the Dimension 20 series, where they try and do, like, a murder mystery, and it's just not really a type of play that D&D is well-suited for. Anyway, I feel like the Al-Qadim Monsters Compendium Appendix occupies the very edge of, like, the AD&D space of 2nd edition. That's why I mentioned this, right? We're looking at a setting that is trying to produce a game that feels quite different from core AD&D, which actually, in some ways, answers a question that I've long held, because I never really played AD&D when it was a thing, and when I look at, like, the Forgotten Realms, and Dragonlance, and Greyhawk, I mean, they all seem pretty similar to me. Then you get the weird ones, right? Al-Qadim, Planescape, Spelljammer, Dark Sun, Ravenloft. Okay, I can see how each of these has a unique gimmick. Planescape is sort of its own thing, but then Pirates, Post-Apocalypse, Gothic Horror, Arabian Nights. Like, those are all, I realize that I'm kind of oversimplifying Spelljammer, but those are all things that you can get. Like, it's a pretty good hook. And those games should feel different. And one way to produce that feeling of difference is through the monster books. It's not that the individual monsters, like, don't make sense or don't work in a traditional D&D framework, right? There isn't any one monster in the Al-Qadim Monsters Compendium Appendix that would feel out of place in, you know, one of the three first edition monster books. But if you look at the overall composition of the book, the balance of what you find in it, the proportions of different monster types, it's way out of line from what we've experienced previously. And I think it's suggesting some kind of magical landscape in which you're as likely to be rescued from human antagonists, you know, bandits or the soldiers of an evil emir or what have you, by a magical being, as you are likely to be threatened by a magical being. And this, I think, has a different, it's not even a question about, like, the prevalence of the fantastic, because I think in Al-Qadim, you're meant to have, like, maybe a higher level of the fantastic in everyday life, but also a lot of these creatures are exotic creatures that live in, like, faraway places that only adventurers would go to. But it's definitely going for something that is tonally different, that is emotionally different. Now, I often critique monster books on the specific question of, like, how useful is this at the table when playing the game? And I feel that that is an important role for a monster book. It's a resource that the GM uses at the table. But just like any other gaming book, it's also there to inspire game ideas when read. And when I read this book, I do get a pretty clear idea of things I could run. So in this sense, the project, I feel, is meeting its goals. Like, that inspiration is happening. Now, my question as a reader approaching this in 2023 is that what Al-Qadim is actually like, or am I just imagining a game that I would like to play and projecting it onto the book? So people who have played a lot of Al-Qadim, I'm interested in your experiences of this topic. I'd like to hear whether what I'm thinking, because I'm kind of just like inferring this from the monster book, and maybe that's not a reliable inference, but that's just kind of how I feel looking at it from this perspective, right? Is this actually the goal of Al-Qadim? One effect that this has had is it's made me a lot more interested in checking out the other Monsters Compendium appendices, you know, Spelljammer, Planescape, Dark Sun, Ravenloft, because I'm interested in seeing how different they are from each other. I would anticipate that both Planescape and Spelljammer, for instance, would be similar in terms of the level of, like, diplomacy that they expect. Like, I would say that Planescape, a lot of the time, is a more, it's not more civilized necessarily, but a lot of it is about weirdness, not even just danger. So you go into another plane and you encounter the strange people who live there, or the strange beings who live there, and you have to like figure out what their deal is. And a lot of the time, it's going to be like just sort of learning the local rules in order to get the people to help you with whatever it is you need help with, right? So there's that exploration aspect to it that maybe has a little more kind of Star Trekiness to it. Not in genre trappings, but in terms of like, you know, we come to a new place and that place has a problem. Whereas if you're in a D&D game, obviously you're moving around a landscape. The places are different from each other, but sort of like fundamental assumptions about the way things work typically don't change very much. By contrast, I'd expect Dark Sun to be full of like punishing monsters who test not only combat stuff, but who put a lot of pressure on resources, which I think is also present to some extent in Al-Qadim. But I don't know. I don't really know. And I'm interested in finding out. In Ravenloft, I would anticipate monsters that are almost like mini scenarios. But again, who knows? So I'm interested in seeing how these different books developed and what they say about their settings. Not that I'm particularly interested in their settings per se. Like, maybe this is just like, I tend to be a little bit of a magpie. Like, I like to take lots of little bits from things. I very seldom really immerse myself in learning the detail of a setting. I don't know. I'm all about vibes. And I can say that this is because I'm efficient in terms of the time I spend as a reader and writer. Or I can say this because I just don't have a lot of patience necessarily. One reason that I'm so obsessive about the things that I was into when I was younger is that is the time that I had the patience to stockpile all of this information. I think it really helps to be younger when you're trying to learn that kind of thing. And so I'm not trying to. I just like the vibes. I'm a vibes guy, I guess. Anyway, whatever. Anyway, that has been the Al-Qadim Monsters Compendium Appendix, and I think it's been interesting in terms of its source material, right? A pretty wide range of different source material being used, and I would say used not 100% like strictly faithfully, but definitely there is a desire to represent this stuff in a way that is somewhat close, like within the limitations of AD&D, close to how those things originated. So that's interesting. But then also it's interesting in terms of what it says about the broader question of monster book design as a whole. It has made me much more interested in playing an Al-Qadim or Al-Qadim-like game. I was kind of surprised by that. So I went into this a little uncertain, but actually, I really enjoyed it, and I'm pleased that we did it. I also have to say that I like the size of these Monstrous Compendium appendices. They're pretty manageable, because I think if you do a lot of setting-specific monsters, it's not as interesting, like there's not as much variety, whereas this Al-Qadim one's like about the right length. Like, I wouldn't like to do hundreds upon hundreds of pages of Arabian Nights fantasy monsters without a break, but this is pretty good. So overall, I would say I had a pretty positive experience with the Al-Qadim Monsters Compendium Appendix, and I'm excited to see what we do next. Now, that's going to be in a couple of weeks at least, but I will let you know what decision I've reached about what to cover next a few episodes from now. However, our next episode is going to be a special episode, and I'm going to talk about some monsters that are both generally useful, but also the villains in an absolutely classic adventure. Actually, I said that'd be the next episode. It's either the next one or it's the next episode that isn't a special, because it may wind up that one of the specials comes in the way. But look forward to it anyway, because it's going to be good right here on Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you've got a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, why not get in touch? I'm on Twitter as @GonzoHistory, on Mastodon as GonzoHistory@dice.camp, or you can find me on Instagram at MonsterManGonzo, or drop me an email, GonzoHistory@gmail.com. Our theme music is an extract from Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster and is used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Our cover art is by Ray Otis. Thanks for listening, and please join me next time for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great.